Hey everyone, welcome to our newest episode for the Music Addict Podcast. Of course, with myself, Tom McDonough.
And Marcus Taylor.
Yes. So, of course, this episode's guest is Kim Logan, who's from Kim Logan and the Silhouettes. I love the name for that with
Oh,
that
what a
new one.
great
She's
band.
had a couple of different bands over the years, but I love the new one. It's kind of a cool name. And she's got some interesting stories and some really cool things. I mean, growing up here in America and now living in Scotland, but having been in the UK music scene and the French music scene, as well as the US music scene, it's really kind of cool. So we had a really good discussion with her.
Yeah, and so musically knowledgeable. Not only in that, but she—I mean, there's opera. I mean, there's she's
Yeah.
got a diverse musical background. I was surprised.
An Amy Lee type thing from looking at how rock should be with the opera type thing, because Evanescence has got that very much kind of the thing that they had in the early 2000s and that. But again, she's got a lot of musical influence from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. A lot of the same ones that I would ever mention if anyone ever asked me. So it's an interesting take on for someone a little bit younger than us who has very similar music taste. So it's very
Yeah,
cool.
such
Music
good energy
transcend
too.
years.
Yeah, I mean, we've been so lucky on this. She has such good energy, man, and she was such a pleasure to talk to. Just insightful, I found myself quiet for a lot of the interview because she was just giving really deep answers.
Yes. We've it was really great. And you're right. She had us a little bit more quiet than normal. So this will be a different one. You won't hear us, talking as much.
Yeah, but
He had
I
some
think
great,
everyone will
she had
enjoy.
great answers.
Great answers. I look forward to her maybe being a spotlight artist and, definitely looking for her being in part of the newsletter. I mean, she was just a fun interview.
And of course, we got to plug even during it for 13 Society, which we rarely talk about on this show. But we
Yeah.
get to plug our lovely paranormal website, 13 Society, which does a lot in astrology because she's talking about astrology for a sec. So it was really kind of cool that we got to talk about that for a few. And we obviously got to talk about influences in music. I want to bring up, remember to, if you want to be on the show, Reverb Nation, make sure
Reverb
you
Nation.
submit through Reverb Nation.
She was a
Definitely do
long
that.
time Reverb Nation. I mean, she's been on Reverb Nation a long time.
Long time, and she has submitted to most of our programs for the last, what, 7 years out of that. I've seen her a long time. She's one of the ones I know, the staple I know, and it's probably why I know her more familiar than she thinks I know her, because I've seen her submissions and seen her transition through music. So it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm glad she won a spotlight this time because she really was a great interview.
Exactly. And we try to separate. One of the things we do in our pick process of this is try to get not all, like, we don't pick five artists from country. We try to spread it around. So sometimes that's the reason it takes us a while to pick people. It's not because the lack of talent. It's because we're trying to make the spread for different genres. So we have
Right.
certain selections. So it's not all the same thing all, in a bunch. So we try to merge that around. So a lot of it. So some of you have been submitting to us and haven't been picked yet. It may be the reasons why it hasn't quite gone through each campaign. It's because of the fact that we're looking at trying to generate different, obviously, backgrounds, music genres, and changes into that. And also we do global. Obviously, with her being in Scotland, I knew she was over there. It's great that we've had a balance between people in Europe and people here in the States.
Yeah, or else we just pick all Detroit and Chicago
Yeah,
musicians.
we pick otherwise, yeah, we just pick Detroit
Yeah,
and
but
Chicago
that wouldn't be
musicians.
fair. I'm glad we try to spread it out and we look for people that have an interesting sound, an interesting something about them that we don't see every day. But she really fit the bill and she surprised with the width and depth of her musical background.
Exactly. So yeah, definitely make sure you sign up for our newsletter at Music Addict. It's free, filled with tips, spotlight artists, and a lot of other things that we produce in that articles, features, and some stuff that's just unique to the newsletter, as well
And
as obviously, remember, for all your recording and production needs, Island,
Island
Chicago
Chicago
recording.
Recording Studio, and don't forget to sign up for the Reverb Nation. That contest has really sent us some interesting artists. So I wish y'all luck. I hope you all sign up for the Music Addict newsletter and for the Reverb Nation contest. And if you need any help, just general advice, check out Music Addict's label services because we love to help.
Exactly. All the things we do at Music Addict, as well as anybody who loves ghost stories and astrology, make sure you check out 13 Society. It's 13, the number, society.com.
Absolutely.
So, and of course, and all I can say is my favorite saying of all time is on to our interview.
See you on the other side.
Hey, I'd like to welcome our next guest, Kim Logan. I always want to say Kim Logan and the Silhouettes because it's so cool. That is cool. I got to ask where that name came from, actually, the Silhouettes.
That name came from Paris. It was a meeting of the minds of me and one of the original lineups of the Parisian Silhouettes. And I was trying to come up with a name that was genderless and kind of ephemeral, but also was the same in French and English, and or at least pronounced the same, and like other European languages too, and whatever. And then my former drummer, Jules Darmon, he came up with this name, and we all agreed on it pretty much immediately because it has like kind of a connotation to the film industry a little bit in France, but other than that, it's like pretty much the same. And I've
It's cool and easy to remember. That's
yeah.
why it's the simplistic things always are the easiest to remember and the most memorable. I mean, because everyone thinks about Coke and Pepsi as being synonymous or remembering things. Simple and easy.
Something a little universal. And it also, I've always been into things like that with visuals too, like shadows and silhouettes and black and white things too. So just made sense. Thanks, Jules.
All right, so yeah, definitely welcome to the show. I've always wanted to ask where that name came from because I remember seeing it, and we've known each other quite a long time actually, because I remember your transitions through things, and for social media, I've seen it, and it's interesting to see how you've grown over the many years. And of course, and I was saying this before we got on air, is that on our Reverb campaigns over the long haul that I've done these for. Long before 2019, 2018, we have I've seen different people over the time, multiple times, over it. I've known things and see things change, and I've seen a lot of yours change. So I'm kind of glad this worked out better this way because I'm glad I got you on the show instead of just doing a review on it because like we do our articles because it's kind of cool because we get to talk to you. I mean, again, you're from America but living in Europe, so it's kind of cool. We have we've been doing a lot in the show with a lot of things people from Europe in the music industry, so it's kind of a cool merge.
For sure. And I'd always been Kim Logan in my music. I grew up in classical music. I used to use my government name. But Kim Logan has always been like the songwriter, I guess, of all the different things that I've done. But the Silhouettes was something I came up with the French band because the lineup was changing, not constantly, but frequently based on how much touring we were doing. So we had multiple drummers. We had two very big personality bass players who added to the identity of the band. And we had a very consistent guitar player, Martin Zissel, and just the identity shifted and morphed around it. But it was cool because it was never too specific or chaining us to one thing. It allowed us some fluidity artistically. And certainly when I started making my new music, which is quite different, it was sort of easy for me to maintain that identity that still felt strong with the Silhouettes because it was like changing scenes or something like that. And then different people came in and certain people stayed. The French band is in random places all over the new record, as well as my UK producer, who is really connected to LA, which is the place that I never spent time before I started making this record. And now I'm there all the time, and it's weird, but I've always maintained that connection to America, the American music industry, the people that I was around and knew when I was living in Nashville and kind of New York when I was 19 to my mid 20s. And it just feels right to still know what's going on in New York and LA. And it's very different than it used to be. Nashville's kind of the same as it ever was.
Yeah, Nashville hasn't changed much. I don't think it ever will. New York always changing. Every single second, every single, everything's a New York second. Literally, it changes every second. But it's good to see that. So looking at your career early on, when did you finally decide you wanted to go into music? How early was that you decided you want to go into music?
My parents always told me that I was singing before I could talk, so I don't think that there's an answer that I can remember for that. But I was always learning songs from the radio, and I think I tried to write songs when I was like six or something. So my parents got me a karaoke machine. That was one of my early memories. I would put cassette tapes into it. This is like the late 90s, so country music was cool. And there was rock crossover, and that's kind of some of the first music I got into. But my dad was playing everything around the house: rock, blues, world music, funk. He was in New York a lot in the 80s with his brother, and my mom's brother was also a musician, so music was just everywhere. But when I was like, I think probably eight or so, I was serious enough, I guess, about it, as serious as you can be at that age, that my parents signed me up for opera. And at nine, I was like, what the hell is this? But I loved it, and I stuck with it until I was 26. So it was just a huge part of my life. And I think that the question was never whether I was going to do it. It was kind of like how I was going to do being an artist as well as being an opera singer. And I think at one point I was convinced that I had to stop being an opera singer, and I sort of still, I guess, agree with that. But I don't know. I think I was always going to get back into it, and the more that I guess, evolve in the industry and get back to what taught me music, the more that I kind of want to either incorporate opera into what I do in the near future with original music, or just get back into being in an opera. Just go do Carmen again, or go do La Bohème and remember what that.
They always say about opera, either you love it or you hate it. There is, and if you hate it, you will grow to love it.
Yeah.
Not in my mind of that, because opera is unique, but is emotional, and there is always a story to it. But the energy from every single tune in opera is amazing, and putting that into rock music with a jazz blues sound, again, if we wouldn't have rock, any kind of rock type thing or modern music without jazz and the blues to begin with. So it's that's it, that is an interesting kind of, I guess it's that smoky room, that smoky jazz room type concept that really what you would have in music.
For sure. I feel like it informs me so much more than I will even admit. And like looking back on the music that I am like dissociating from right now, which is my first two albums and some of the other things that I've done, I realize how much it informed my singing and my writing. And what sometimes one day you wake up and it just doesn't feel right anymore. Or maybe you're even late to realizing that. But I realized that. And I realized that I was tired of some of the probably more operatically informed things that I was doing. And I also, at the same time, was lucky enough to realize that naturally I was starting to write in sort of a different flow musically, especially vocally, and in a different place where I could be a little bit more, it's hard to say natural with it, because singing at a high note or a high volume is natural for me because of that background, but it's not natural to deliver certain words that way. And I think that maybe because I was writing sort of different concept lyrics or something that was a little more esoteric or a little bit more political even than some of the things I'd written before, it felt like I needed to deliver them differently. So I think that that was also a huge part of wanting to shift my sound a little bit and just and keep some of that. Like I'm not going to just drop off with the things that I like to vocally do, but This, yeah, that's why this feels different. And the really all I can say before I was able to prepare this music to be released is that it's different, and playing it for people has been very different. So it's been fun.
I never would have guessed opera was your background. When I was listening to your music, and Tom's known you a long time, so this is my introduction to your music. I'm like, well, she can obviously go. I mean, I can hear the pipes of my, she can go, but I would not have guessed opera. That is such an interesting, you have such an interesting background. You moved to Scotland to get your LA connection, and your opera is your, well, how do you describe your sound? What would you call your what you're saying is your new sound? What would you describe it as?
The new one is complicated. I think I had to do the old one to get there. But when I was living in Nashville, and I was very young, I moved there when I was a teenager, and it was very right after music school, and it was very informed by old country music. And I was kind of rebelling against crappy 2000s country music, and especially 2010s country music. So I was really into the traditional kind of Delta blues and 20s, 30s country, but I also was trying to make rock music, and I hadn't found a solid band yet for Kim Logan, but I was playing with some of the best musicians in the country, so it was a challenge to make them all sound like a band rather than sound like a bunch of the slickest guys, most capable guys, but they've maybe never met each other before that last 6 weeks of rehearsal or even less time sometimes. But it's been that journey that's helped me sort of narrow down the genres that I wanted to do, because in trying to make rock music, I finally found some rock people in Nashville that thankfully also by meeting and connecting with the crew behind Jack White and working with Vance Powell, his producer, and Dominic Davis, his band leader and bass player, just opening that world to meeting musicians also like Daru Jones, and realizing that you could mix rock music with country, with hip hop, with all of these things. That was a real galaxy brain for me. And then I was just kind of dissatisfied with the Nashville vibe. But then I realized that rock music is so strong in the UK. It always has been. And I actually started touring here before I was living in France for a little bit. And then I found the real rock scene of Paris, which was really cool. And that's when the second album was kind of, in many ways, straight up blues rock, but very psychedelic and informed by the 70s and even some of like 80s Aerosmith or 90s grunge. But then when I was writing the new stuff, I was just listening to very different music. I was listening to music that was made between like 1985 and 2005. I was listening to Depeche Mode and Nine Inch Nails and Soundgarden. And then when I started working with my producer, who was like kind of London, LA, Rex Roulette, he plays guitar for Eagles of Death Metal. So he got me into Queens of the Stone Age, which was very late to the train. 31 years old, discovering that I liked that made me feel 14. That was very cool. I didn't think I could become a fan like that again. And that's just also made me think a lot about like music theory. Josh Elmy is really brilliant as a guitar player and kind of put me on a good path with still writing rock music, but wanting to experiment with some of those 80s sounds or 90s sounds. And then I even liked Audioslave. I like some of the cheesy Y2K rock. I'm like into it.
Audioslave's great.
But yeah, that's the new stuff is definitely a combo of some industrial sounds, some trip hop sounds. The biggest influence probably was the solo albums of Mark Lanegan, and that's the big earth-shattering inspirational moment that I had in working with Rex was him telling me about the Blues Funeral album and all of the solo stuff that Mark did after Queens of the Stone Age. And it was grunge music and psych music with drum machines. And my mind was blown because the closest thing I think I'd heard to that was Nine Inch Nails or Radiohead, but that's different. It's different with Mark. So that's, I don't know. I'm trying to make a little bit girl Mark Lanegan stuff, but you can hear the French influence too. You can definitely hear the drum machines and the bass and the not quite French touch, but you can tell I lived in France for 4 years. For sure.
It's interesting how that the French having the French music scene and the British music scene and London, and if no one really understood, London music scene is different than the rest of the UK's music scene.
Very.
And top, yeah. So it's interesting to see those influences all pour back into the States over the
Yeah.
years. And it's that's what's so funny about how you say everything will led you back to here. That's because it's all here.
Very funny, but I'm always gonna be American. I never realized how American I was until I came here. Because I don't know, my dad's family's Quebecois and my mom's family's from New England, so a very American specific type. But I just didn't feel super connected to Florida until I was older and realized how much it informed my experience. But I just didn't feel like staying in America, I guess. I didn't feel like I was connecting with what was going on there as much as I could with London or Paris or Athens. I've spent a lot of time in Greece in the last few years because of
Nice.
connection I have with a great band over there. But I was right. I like it better over here, but I'm never gonna lose what's in me, what's American about me. And that's been another lesson. Expatriating is a fascinating experience. Being an immigrant is a fascinating experience. Not sure if I would recommend, but it sure is something.
Well, you didn't, at least you haven't lost your American accent.
Oh,
You've
no.
maintained that. So yeah, definitely you can take you out of America, but they can't take America out of you. So you kept that. So you didn't collect that. You have not collect any of the dialect, especially from Scotland or France or in the rest of Lower England, because you don't hear any of it in any of your I was surprised because I was wondering if you were going to have any of the words, because here they pick it up quick. Because
Yeah,
we have such a different dialect.
I guess they do, but also I'm a Gemini, and I think that if I'm speaking to French people, I speak kind of differently because French people understand you sort of differently. And I speak French. I know I speak French with an accent when I do, but I've spoken French most of my life. And sometimes when you're speaking English to a French person, for instance, you sort of have to either like switch the sentence structure around so that it's more like French and they understand you way quicker, or you have to like say a funny word of franglais so that they understand what it means kind of with an accent and then they get it. But you have to also, I think being part of an expat and surviving is having some command of language, and I think it probably changes depending upon who I'm speaking to, but I think it's most often in the words that you have to use over here because I will have to say lift and certain things that you don't grow up saying as an American, but it's a new it's less of an accent, more of a language. Like also Scottish is a language. My friends here mostly are from the suburbs outside of Glasgow, and learning to communicate with them was poetic and challenging, and they spell differently. They use ancient words. They use modern slang words. They change vowels. They change a lot of things. And if you think that you can understand somebody from the UK, but you don't know anybody from the west coast of Scotland or Aberdeen, even, you don't know the whole English, Britannic, whatever it is, language, because Scots is its own language and it's mixing with modern British English, and it's beautiful, it's cool, but it's a little hard to learn sometimes.
Yeah, I've had a couple of friends who've been from Scotland that I know are still there, and you're right. It's been a challenge over the years, some of the things you say, because some of the jokes I've said to them just fall flat, and you're like, but
And they're people on the planet, man. The Scottish and the Irish are the funniest people on the planet. Greeks are pretty funny too, but once you learn what the words mean, it's very funny.
so it's good to see that you've done really well over there. And again, I love the British music scene. I follow the London music scene all the time. I'm always looking for artists. I'm always digging through there, and I have since early 2000 when I had WROM radio in Detroit. I was always constantly looking for, because it's a unique music sound, but I always love it, and I've always loved working with it, and I've written certain songs just directly for that. So it is it's a cool thing to see you've done really well over there.
It's so strong over here. And honestly, this is despite a political environment that is often hostile to the arts, even in the UK. This is happening arts are getting defunded at every turn. Before I continue this tirade, just one moment. I have to answer something. Keeping our environment quiet. Yeah, I know that the United States is changing, and I'm not going to say anything that I'm not absolutely sure of, but I know that the arts are in danger, and they have been for a really long time, and we don't get federal funding in the United States, and they still do here in the UK, and they absolutely do in the European Union. A place like the Netherlands is funding rock albums. Scotland does too. Creative Scotland is fantastic, but its budgets are being slashed. Tory government for the last decade or so before Labour came into power, which is pretty much no different, just like the States, was slashing arts budgets for a very long time, and it's damaged this country. And I think that the younger generations and the creative class of every generation knows that very well. And that's part of the very weird vibes and seemingly weird, scary tipping point that we might be coming to. It's not a million miles away from what we're experiencing in America. And after the loss of EU funding, culture is suffering here. The museums that are down the street in Scotland are, you know, getting the EU plaques taken off the walls. And then you see their facilities go under construction for the next 3 years because they don't have the money to maintain what they used to. And it's, you know, it's hard to pin it on anybody. It's a collective, unfortunate situation that's been calcifying. But it's, despite that, the UK music industry is one of the strongest in the world. And especially for guitar music, alternative music, things that were born here, things that we've been in a long conversation as Americans with the UK music scene about, inventing genres back and forth, all coming back to American and British Black people. But we've been reinventing pretty well in this conversation for a long time. And I think that I never would have been able to evolve as an artist if I hadn't included being here to participate in that conversation. France is on its own trip. That's another conversation, but that I'm glad I have that influence. But the UK is just consistently turning out bands that are incredible, and other parts of Europe too, you know, Sweden, Greece. It's great.
So how does AI music and its evolution of change is coming up, and it's really changing things across in the States. How is Europe looking at the invention of how AI music has changed things? Is a game changer for people who did not have what you and I have in talent and doing music, all of a sudden can do things that they couldn't have done before.
I've been uncomfortable several times over my career about the democratization of the music creation experience, because I think that, I mean, the same thing happened to music journalism. Our filters for greatness that were very flawed in the 20th century, but still were the channels which you would trust to bring you talent, they died. They don't exist anymore. Print media, it's not dead, but it's dead. And it's still a treasured medium. Many of them are, but we're getting our information, unfortunately, from TikTok. And of course, we've done all these things. I could say is a curmudgeonly millennial. I'm like a mid to young millennial. And, you know, I just, it upsets me to see the algorithm take control. And it upsets me to see the lowest common denominator being catered to. It's been this way pretty steadily for the last 25 years. But people said that in the 80s. They said that in the 90s. And I love 80s and 90s music. And there was, I don't know, a real turning point, I guess, with Spotify, and that is another whole conversation. But now that we have democratized music to the point of tech being what gives everybody the gateway to do this from their house, which I do from my house and is a blessing, I'm not knocking that. I'm knocking the fact that you don't necessarily have to go through any kind of rigorous training like a lot of us did when things were a little more analog. The millennials being the last ones to experience that, maybe old Gen Z, but it's, I don't know. I will tell you that I'm sure that people in like Paris or London are using AI music programs on a daily basis. I know it, to do compositional things, to do recording things, but I don't hear a lot of chat about it. Where I'm talking about AI the most is Los Angeles, because my friends out there have been using it for a very long time. my friends out there have the strongest opinions about AI because my friends are musicians and music producers and songwriters and publicists and people who work in film. And every single one of those people and so many more are being affected by this and are anywhere from under a real cloud about it to excited about it and embracing it with open arms. But there's even my friends that I've seen get really excited about it or start regularly using it, know that there's limitations and know that everybody should be setting their own limitations and moral system with it. But I have used AI as a tool in several instances when I have been teaching a band member the bass track that I don't and can't play from a track from my own releases. And I can run it through an app that can isolate that bass track more quickly than I can send an email to another country and time zone to get an engineer to take the time to do that when they might not have time to do that. That allowed me to teach a bass line to a bass player in one evening through an app for free. I don't know the economics of that. I'm sure they took my data, but it helped. And everybody has everybody's data. So a tool like that, or even in making the beat for the song that I put out in January, Half Life, the first single from the record that's coming, Saturnalia, we reverse engineered some of that beat with AI programs to find out where we could snatch certain chopped live performances and rearrange them to create something new. And we didn't end up using it for the actual programming of the track, but it taught us how and where to put things. And or made it easier or quicker. And I believe in AI as a tool, but I believe that we are fooling ourselves if we think that we can keep it that way. And yeah, I'm worried about it, but that I'm not hearing enough conversations about it over here, I don't think. The conversations I'm hearing are fully American at this point.
Yeah, AI, I agree. It's a great tool, especially for the people who have the background in music and understanding. It can use it for the effective reasons that it's used for, and it should be in the right hands. But if it's just
Nothing's in the right
somebody, yeah.
band.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
No
it's getting in the hands of
answer.
people who now think they have music because they were able to write a bunch of words down, stick it in there, and get it out. That doesn't mean that you can do music, but I agree. There is some, it has been a ingenious tool, but how long will that tool remain a tool and not turn into something else?
Oh, we're
I
already
agree.
way behind it, unfortunately. We are foot that ship has sailed.
Yeah, I know. We missed that ship and the opportunity. And I agree. It's interesting to see that here in the US, it's more of a conversation than anywhere else.
Your answer was wonderful. I talk about this quite a bit, but most of the people I get to talk to about it are, they're my age. I'm over half a hundred. So we have a different view of it because in our time, in order to play with other musicians, you had to have mastered something. You had to have earned your way into the room. Now with AI, you don't have to earn your way in. It's given people the ability to say they wrote things. I have the, oh, I wrote this. I'm like, I don't
It's a wild shortcut. You're so right. That's such a good way to put it because there's like a social code and like a merit code among musicians a lot of time where you're trying to find other people that you vibe with and collaborate with because you're looking for the quintessence of the thing, the spiritual thing, the thing you can't explain. And for me, there's none of that in AI. And if there is, it's pretty sinister.
Yeah, I've, but here is my stance on it. It is better to be in the hands of musicians, because we have a respect for the institution of creativity. I've never used AI and said, "Make me a cute song about a cat." That I have never done. But I've got a lot of musical interns, and I've got one that's 18 years old, just turned 19. He's my prodigy, and he is just fabulous, such a great mind. And he called me and he says, "Hey, have you heard of this thing called Suno?" And blah, blah. And I said, "Hey, man, watch yourself." And he said, "Why?" He said, "It's great." I said, "Well, it's like giving someone who's learning math a calculator. They will never be as good at math once they start using the calculator." I'm like, you will remove the element of inspiration, because you'll just start throwing things into the AI and it will give you something and you will write from there as opposed to creating it yourself. I used to give the same warning when I taught theory. I'm like, music, because I always was music theory, I said, should come with the caveat. Because if you know 251, 362, if you know that if I'm playing this chord, logically this chord should come next. If you rely on that, it takes away from the just moving around until you find the right. You will lose that. The trick is to understand it, use it as the tool, but not deny yourself the ability to do it without it. Because I'm like, the musicians in our group, me, you, Tom, if the power goes out and we still have instruments, the show can go on. If you're an AI artist, if the power goes out, there is no show. Because it is the electricity that is doing it. It's not your, and I'm not saying that they are all talented programmers and you are clever prompters. But what is
No, I know
different?
what you mean. I know what you mean. I'm still, I my life is littered with notebooks. When I write songs, no matter what I'm using, whether I'm even using a drum machine or MIDI or whatever, in the last few years, there's notebooks in the room. There's acoustic guitar in the room, and I can't let go of these very human tools to me that I can't even find what I'm looking for without them.
I feel that.
I often feel like the old guy. Yeah, you stay off my lawn. I don't want to be that guy, but I still hope that people will take the time to learn an instrument. Like I already believe that people won't learn music theory anymore. It'll be like cursive handwriting.
Already happening. It's already happening. My very, very longtime friend in Los Angeles, she's her name's Karina. She's an amazing DJ that goes by CK Jones, but she's a musician and studio musician and producer. And we grew up together in the chorus in our school. It was kind of like opera, it was classical chorus. And we traveled to the UK for the first time together, actually. And she's been out working in hip hop and pop and R&B in LA for a long time. And she, as a producer, was able to use all of the sort of like classical training that she grew up with, like playing horns and playing guitar and piano and classical singing as well as contemporary singing. And putting all of that together is, I think, sometimes the only way that you can be a producer or that I trust somebody. It's hard to trust a producer that can't play instruments. I know that that happens a lot now, but even like Billie Eilish's brother, who's such a brilliant producer, Phineas, can play anything he lays his hands on. But Karina uses AI sometimes in some of her new projects, and she very bravely, and has been talking to me about it. And we've been making sure that we could still identify and like dialoguing about how you can identify things that have come from Suno or things that have come from Splice, and making sure that our ears are evolving along with this technology and making sure we understand that feeling that our ears are bleeding from this AI music, or understand the feeling that I get in sort of like an uncanny valley way where I can sort of always tell when something has been made or tweaked with AI or an image, especially a moving image. It just makes me feel sick. And I'm not against it in every way, but I'm glad that I have this like almost visceral reaction to it because I want to always be able to tell the difference. And these have been some of the most valuable conversations I've had with any fellow musician lately, has been speaking with Karina about the implications of AI, because she's someone who's not only another woman in the industry, but constantly using music technology in a way that I've only recently become comfortable with and accustomed to, like music software to record myself or make beats or anything like that. So I think it's just a conversation we need to kind of constantly be having because it's way more advanced than we think it is. It's already taken over way more than we think it has, and we're behind the eight ball, man.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. So you also said that you were venturing into astrology, which again, I'm not against astrology.
No,
We run one of the big paranormal websites on top of it. So yeah, I'm not against it.
amazing to hear. I love to hear that. Sometimes people can get uncomfortable with it, but it's often because people associate astrology with religion, I think largely correctly. And I try to explain to people that there's no sort of like universal conceived deity in astrology, that astrology has offered a lot of associations to different deities throughout every period of history. And we're talking about archetype when we're talking about astrology, and we're talking about how these deities come together, how what they share, their similarities, and sort of comparing and contrasting world religions can teach you a lot about astrology. So I think that that's maybe where the confusion comes in sometimes. But I've been into astrology my whole life, studying it pretty seriously for about a decade. But in COVID, everybody was freaking out and, you know, kind of turning to whatever made them comfortable, religion or work or a political cause or a relationship. That stuff happens in a pandemic, in a lockdown. And people were coming to me because they knew I knew some things about this, and I didn't get really serious about education or certification until the dark years, the 2020, 2021 times, where I was like, all right, I better get some sort of certification to fill any gaps in my knowledge and prove that I can do this to a certain standard. And I started giving readings to my friends. And once I was comfortable really analyzing a chart up, down, and sideways, and from different house systems, from different periods, and, you know, kind of being the like academic that I was as a kid, like an opera nerd and a language nerd, and all of these things sort of helped. But then, of course, it exploded in pretty much every media and commercial space. And it's so much thanks to Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who have a crazy aptitude for it.
Yep.
And it made millennials and Gen X step up our game about the authority that we need to have carrying astrology into the next generations. And one of the first things I did when I started spending a lot of time in Scotland was to seek out these old associations that have been around for the better part of the last century, who are keeping the academic traditions alive behind what is pretty much a geometry thing. It's a science thing, and it's been called a pseudoscience for so long, but it really is an academic empirical data giving pattern system that certain books in the modern era of astrological education can really easily break it down for even the biggest skeptics about how historically for about 4,000 years, human behavior has followed these archetypal patterns corresponding with the geometry of planetary angles.
Yep.
It's pretty hard to refute when you see it in a spreadsheet, you know, and I think that the average person is becoming more open to it because you can spreadsheet that shit.
Yes, yes, you can, which is interesting. I mean, modern technology and what it can do for that whole thing. And you're right. I think it's been an explosion. One of the things we changed at 13 in the last, like the last year, we started doing I Ching readings every month. And now everyone's doing them behind us since we've been doing it. Now I've seen a lot of the websites take up behind it. So now we're going to up the game and start adding more stuff to astrology and behind it. And it's just it's interesting to see how that is expanded and exploded all of a sudden on the scene, much like it did in the like early 2000s.
Exactly. And this is when I think my brain was first sparked, when I was, you know, a little kid in elementary school, seeing my birthday is May 26th and my dad is May 27th. So he would always show me the Sunday paper and say that we were the Gemini twins. And it was part of my consciousness. My parents both had a lot of friends that were in that kind of like new age space, and still do. But it's just also something I think that the astrology of the last years, where we've seen this explosion in the culture and in, you know, a reinvigoration of this into academic spaces and into places where sociopolitically it's more acceptable or taken more seriously. And of course, that's going to be met with an equal amount of pushback. But I think we're good at sort of starting to refute the pushback and being analytical about this stuff, because it's ancient. It's the most ancient thing we have. Before we were, you know, doing astronomy, we were doing astrology. And long before the telescope, especially. But it's just, I think that people are opening up to it because a lot of the people who have ushered it in are of generations that were born with outer planetary placements in signs like Capricorn or Aquarius or Sagittarius, which are all very logical and educational and able to sort of carry this information into these future generations. That's a lot of Gen X and millennials and Gen Z have outer planetary placements in Sagittarius, Capricorn, and Aquarius. And I would trust those archetypal human energies to bring this super delicate, super ancient, but really solid course of study into the new age. And I think that Gen Z is thirsty for it, Gen Alpha, because they're made of a different spiritual makeup. So hopefully we trust them to carry it on. But I found the Scottish Astrological Association when I first started getting serious about things here in 2020, and I'm going to a meeting with them next week, and they're just this wonderful council of professors, academics, elders in many fields who have so much experience in the astrology business, but also in the academia of it since the 70s. And this is sort of what I encourage Gen Z to do now, is don't just get your astrology from the internet. Find people, because the best source of astrology is other astrologers. And if you consider yourself an astrologer or want to be one, find ones that are older than you and learn what they've seen and learn what they've been through, because our whole entire bag, this whole thing is about time and the passage of time and how that affects everything, or how that correlates with everything, because we can't prove that it affects anything. But I think it's very quantum. I think the whole thing comes down to quantum science that we're just cracking into. So hopefully there'll be actually a lot of advancements in it in the next 20 years, I'm hoping.
I think we shall see some. I agree. I personally believe that there's going to be a lot of advancements, at least within the next 20 years, because there's been a lot in the last 20 years, there's been a ton. And I think that the movement's going to go further. Again, and I always love the word, if one, astrology is insightful, and two, it's a movement, and everything is a movement. And funny enough, remember how you did say it's ancient, and it is. The Egyptians and the Greeks did it all the time and lived by it, as well as. And the arts
The
came
oldest
from,
thing we have.
So it's an interesting to see that. And the arts came a lot from that, the beginning of this going into that, because look at the Greeks. The Greeks designed organized arts, and much of the Egyptians did, but the Greeks really had solidified into Western, how about this, into what's Western culture, versus Eastern culture, which of course,
Is Greek the West? Is culture the West? Yeah, that's a question.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's why I've enjoyed spending so much time in Greece, as well as the amazing music and art scene, and just the people are so wonderful. But the history of so much of what I do with astrology is there, and I love that that's one of the best places to see the stars or have a conversation with people who have really known their own astrology since they were children. And relating some of the history to the modern times, it's just a great place for it. And they really do have a great music scene.
Yes, they
Athens.
do.
You know,
So,
Kim, I'm not normally this quiet, but your answers have truly been fascinating to me. I'm truly enjoying it. You
you
know,
got him quieter. Yeah,
I
he's
am
never.
on the soapbox that the more this future learns, the more it validates the past. And we use all of these computers and we do all this to say, hey, you know, those guys were right. And like you say, once you can put it on a spreadsheet, it becomes much harder to call it pseudoscience. It's much harder for them, you know, what they then start to do is just ignore it. You know, they can't disprove, so then it's fringe.
Rationalize it
It's
away.
benign. Say again.
Or just rationalize it away. It really depends on how you were raised and things like that too. And I love that so many artists are finding it and putting it into their art. You know, all the pop girlies are writing about their Saturn returns. I wrote about mine. It's a huge awakening time that happens in your late 20s when you become the artist you are. So there's no wonder why that's a pattern. But there's a book that I would encourage everybody interested in this to read, and it's called Cosmos and Psyche, and it's by a guy called Richard Tarnas, and he was a lifelong academic and historian who, much like Carl Jung about 80 years ago, put his whole academic reputation on the line by coming out as an astrologer and putting his weight behind his theory. But it's not even his theory. It's like he tapped into the universal, very Jungian theory that when the planets move and geometrically align with each other, there's an empirically observable pattern of archetypal behavior in human history. It's trackable, and it's all in that book. So Cosmos and Psyche blew my mind about 6 years ago, and it's kind of where everybody should start, especially skeptics.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Check it out.
I know we're running out of time. We would love to have you back.
Absolutely.
And music-wise, yeah. And, I mean, of course, you got what, KimLogans.net. Everyone can check you out there for sure. Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm bad about the internet sometimes, but this new music is coming out, and I'll be more present. I try not to let social media ruin my brain, but definitely coming with some visual art that I'm excited about to go along.
When you say coming, do you have any dates yet? Anything you want us to?
I do. So Half-Life came out in January, and we put some things out for that. But I am currently working on the release of the album's title track, Saturnalia, which will be coming on April 18th. And then we'll do another song not long after that in May. And I'll be doing the Great Escape Festival in the UK here in May in Brighton. And I'll see you in Chicago next week.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Listen, I'm serious. I'd love to meet you in person. We can sit down, have a cup of coffee. And if I can get you to sing, I'm going to try.
All right. I will. I don't know if I'll have a guitar, maybe have an acoustic guitar. And
I got lots of stuff. Don't you worry about it.
Amazing. I'll be with my friend Olivia that I was speaking about. Perfect. I'm excited.
Same. Cool. I look, so that's next Saturday.
Yep.
I will keep my studio available.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday I'll be in Chicago. So I'll hit you up. I'll put my number and we'll all get each other on the international WhatsApp.
Yes, beautiful. Exactly.
WhatsApp's my thing, so I'm right there with you.
Perfect.
I so enjoyed your conversation today. Thank you.
Ooh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being on.
Great company.